Oh, thank you. Knowing that we do not have a quorum, so we're not going to vote on any business today, but we will get some reports. So is there any public, actually, there's public comments. Johanna, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us about what you told us earlier?
Ooh, sorry. Ooh. Sorry, trying to get everything up. Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm new here. My name is Johanna, and I am the founder and executive director of Companion Animal Medical Project, and we are a 501c3 nonprofit that provides veterinary care and other basic supplies to pet owners experiencing homelessness, and or low-income housed pet parents. We currently have monthly wellness and vaccine clinics in Bend and Redmond, and we will be in Lapine tomorrow. And our hope is to be in Prineville and Madras this summer at least three times. So we have a mobile van that we drive around, and we have our veterinary clinic essentially set up in that van. And then we have other pet food and other basic supplies. And Tiana's on here. She's our clinic operations lead. And our hope is to just get familiar with the different communities and see how we can support. Additionally, on top of veterinary care, so we do free spay and neuter for pet parents. Again, free vaccines. We recently got some of the EHA pet funding, so we're working with Neighbor Impact to get that money out into the community as fast as possible. And that funding can be used for veterinary care, spay and neuter, dog licensing, pet food, other basic supplies, and stuff like that. And that's we have an application for that. And yeah, it's kind of it in a nutshell. We also have pet assistance for pet deposits as well. And so yeah, us being here today, we just want to see how we can collaborate with Jefferson County and see what the need is, where the need is, and how we could best serve your community.
Well, thank you for coming. I met with Johanna earlier, and I wanted to introduce her to the committee here, since we're a vast discipline group here. And so if someone in our different disciplines have somebody you know that might need the service or could figure out how to tie them in, this would be a great way to do that.
Yeah, and we have a website, and I'm happy to put that in the chat. And if people, I can also put our email in there if people want to email to learn more or have questions right now, whatever works best for this committee.
I'm Cindy.
Yeah, hi, I'm Cindy Potter from Best Care.
Hi, Cindy.
And we work with a lot of clients that are all low income, living on SSI or SNAP or well below the poverty line, that have we have they do have pet emotional support animals from their doctor, their therapist, or mental health. Would they count for this project? Because I mean, it's good that for them to get these dogs and cats spayed and neutered and vaccines when they're living on 934 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah, so unfortunately, that answer is not super straightforward. It kind of depends on the funding that we have available. When we have our clinics, we call them like the camp clinics. Right now, we're trying to find a location in Madras that we could be for 3 months. Those clinics would absolutely be open to anyone with living in a fi on a fixed income to come spay and neuter. We do prioritize with our limited funding. We do prioritize unhoused pet owners. And then the funding that we have from Neighbor Impact, the EHA pet, is for pet parents who are living outdoors, experiencing homelessness, or at a shelter. So we are always trying to increase our funding. All of our services are free for those that we serve. So we rely off donations and grants in order to provide the care. But we also, our funding can also be flexible depending on the circumstances. If someone's at risk of an eviction or something like that, where they have to have their, get their pets up to date on vaccines, spay or neutered, anything like that, then we of course want to make sure that they can stay housed and provide that vet care.
What kind of space are you looking for?
We really just need a parking lot. So last summer we were in that dirt lot behind Sonic, and we set up with the Hive. We've reached out to Epic Property Management and have yet to hear back. But for us, kind of to answer your, address your question before about, you know, housed pet parents, we'd really like to be able to set up at some subsidized or affordable housing units, so we could provide on-site care for the families living there. But we really just need a parking lot. We have all the supplies. We bring all the volunteers, and we're there for about 3 hours.
So is that same location good, or do you need a different location?
That location could work out. The we didn't see that many pets when we were there. I think we saw, Tiana, correct me if I'm wrong, like one dog and a cat. So if we really want to try to make as much impact as possible. So I think that's why, you know, being at this committee meeting to understand like where the need is, we want to be flexible and be supportive in that capacity. So we can go back there. If that's an option, we're absolutely happy to go back there. Again, if there's a housing unit that can serve a lot of pet parents, we're also happy to go there.
I was just thinking that's currently where our largest homeless population seemed to be mustered at. And I was wondering if there was advertising or some kind of information that got out when you were coming that might help. Trent, who just stepped out for some reason, he's our boots on the ground. He seems to be able to visit with just about everybody that's out there. We could send him with some flyers to push some things out, or at least word of mouth or something, if that would help.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if there's a way to get some email addresses, then I'm happy to, once we find those dates, then email out all of our information. If people have transportation, they're always welcome to travel into our, to like Bend or Redmond. But again, we want to try to alleviate as many barriers as possible, transportation being one of them. So, you know, in sure. Someone's neighborhood is always better.
There's another thing that we do a thing in the park every year.
Yeah,
community. There's a community, a day, a community in the park where there's health screening that goes on. There's haircuts. There's clothing exchange.
There's umpteen people. Resources out there.
A whole bunch of resources all come into Saheli Park all day long. That would be a great time to go there.
Yeah, we have a one vet there. My boss, Gary Buss, who's the founding of that. I need to talk to Gary about that. But let's leave that open as a possibility. We have historically had one vet there. Maybe, Johanna, I can get your number and we can talk offline.
Yeah, absolutely. I will put our contact information into the chat.
And then also when you were at this dirt field or whatever parking lot by Sonic, now we have the shelter up there. Tony, do you have many people that come in with dogs or cats?
Our lease agreement, except where it's applicable by law, like service animals, does not allow for animals on property.
So
we sure could post.
So Yana, we'll keep you in touch with that community day. And also if you come up, when you start coming closer to that time, when you want to come up,
mm-hmm.
please let us know and we'll start spreading the word throughout our different disciplines and get Trent out there too, spreading the word.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yana, right. You had anything you wanted to add?
No, just that when it's time for the clinics, I'll definitely be like in charge of, you know, trying to find the veterinarian. So if who you were saying in that day, your normal veterinarian, like I would reach out to him and, you know, try and help alleviate some of these barriers on that side of like getting staffing and volunteers.
Thank you. Cool. Is there anybody else for public comment?
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Come on up here and find a mic, introduce yourself for the record.
Actually, it's not a comment, it's just information. So tomorrow is...
What's your name, please?
Oh, Jean Robick, COIC. So tomorrow is our Homeless Leadership Coalition general membership meeting. It's open to the public, but tomorrow might be of interest to all of you because they're going to do the preliminary point in time count data. So if you want a Zoom invite to that, either let myself or Tony know. We can forward the meeting invite to you. I think it'll be really interesting, and Tony did a great job really facilitating that this year. So they will break it down by community and probably county, town, you know, like that. So if any of you want to sit in on that, like I said, it's open to the public, and both Tony and I can forward you that invite.
And what time is that?
Tomorrow. Oh, Tony, do you have that up? I think it's 3:30 to 4:30, if I remember off the top of my head. It's Zoom. It's all on Zoom. Yeah.
But it's Rocio.
It's the Homeless Leadership Coalition, which the city of Madras should be a member of.
I got that email.
Heard of that?
I haven't talked to him about it yet. So.
Maybe.
I'm an equal opportunity mooch.
What's that?
I'm an equal opportunity mooch.
Okay.
Or nag, or whatever.
Okay. Anything else? Can you email that to me as well, please? The invite? Would you send me that invite too for that? Okay. You do. Anything else? Okay, move on the regular agenda. We can't really appoint anybody else to the next, so we'll just go right to number two, update on retrieval efforts for shopping carts.
Marco Mack, City of Madras Code Enforcement Officer. Good news to report on the shopping carts. Following the meeting that we had with the store managers several weeks ago, we have 323 carts that have been collected by our contractor between October and March. And the good news is that over the last 3 weeks, Safeway has hired a contractor to pick up carts. So of that 323 carts since October, more than 200 of those were Safeway. Over the last 3 weeks that their contractor's been in place, we've collected 8 carts. So their contractor is doing a good job of going out and searching where these carts are at and returning them. And we're going to be working with their contractor to enter into the homeless camp to retrieve the carts that are in that location.
Impressive.
A great report. I also want to report that they have instituted on some carts a electronic wheel locking system. So some of the smaller carts won't leave the store. And so they do actually have a placard on there. You'll see it's the small black carts, as I recall. So some progress on all fronts.
That's great. Thank you. Report on Third Street campsite and site preparation.
Very good. We have a PowerPoint for this with just a picture that we're going to show for you folks. And the Third Street site development is just west of the shelter. And it's an area that is on this map here. It's kind of a upside down L shape, which is city responsible property for easements for future roads. And it's the location that we're going to be working with for designating a campsite. Right now, code enforcement and Public Works is working on a step-by-step process. In this picture at the top right, you'll see a blue container or blue marking. That's going to be our storage container for personal items when we go to implement the ordinance. And then around the perimeter, that white line is the perimeter of the campsite, and the dark colored black squares would be demarcation for making sure that our campers are staying within the camping area. And we're planning on using concrete blocks or K-rail to designate those areas. And we've gone out with Public Works and we've actually marked that whole area. There's existing landscaping markings for the perimeter of the property. And what's important is future expansion. ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation, owns property that we're working on potentially getting right to use that property to expand the size of the camp. So some of the efforts that we're looking at in developing this would be spacing the campsites out so that way if there should be a fire, that a tent doesn't burn into the next tent. And also if there should be some type of a fire on the site, that we've got some type of a fire break to the adjacent wildland areas. So we've positioned the gray areas are gonna be gravel, which would be designated for access. You cannot camp on those areas. So that's gonna help provide some type of a fire break. And then we'll be separating the tents from each other by some spacing. So in this effort, we're working with Public Works to identify next steps to put this together. They're gonna be working with a contractor to actually implement portions of this effort. Did you wanna add some more, Nick?
No, I think that's a great report. And this will be part of a component of the report to the City Council at a future work session on our efforts to start implementing or enforcing the camping regulations. So this will be part of that conversation there. I think, you know, you got to have a location and then you got to have the operational details. And that's where our resource meeting that's occurring weekly being convened by the police department is really so important. And so we're having lots of conversations about that. And, you know, as I shared with my team this morning, the city administrator and I had the opportunity to listen to the deputy city manager and sergeant of Medford Police Department last week on their operations to enforce their camping regulations all along Bear Creek. Imagine having a 3-mile river or creek running through your town north and south, the heart of your downtown. And over the top of that was I-5. So you had an elevated bridge all the way over it. That's what they have. And so they have been enforcing their camping regulations with, of course, a designated city-owned campsite with some, most people call them tiny homes or small places for people to live there and having success. A lot of lessons learned there. One of the things I've asked Marco to do is to contact their police department and see how they're working with their other agencies. The sergeant did say that one thing that it always happens is if the police department calls another partnering agency, they always answer the phone. And if they need resources or assistance, it's there immediately and vice versa. He said the police department, they fall over themselves running to the camps along Bear Creek to help out. And it's really a partnership because you never know when there's going to be an incident or a need. And so they have a good working relationships. But that was kind of interesting that they've all just kind of agreed that when you call, oh, you come. That was kind of neat to know. So there's a few lessons learned there. Of course, scale, when you have almost 100,000 person community, you have a lot more resources in terms of law enforcement, community partners. Medford is the county seat for Jackson County, so they have a lot of services related to the county, mental health and healthcare as well. So that helps as well. But the way that they engage the homeless individuals in Bear Creek and the way that they work together, I think, is where we stand to learn. And maybe as we start enforcing our regulations, do so with maybe less errors.
Good. Question for you. So where exactly is the shelter from this? Where would the shelter sit? Why would?
On the picture there to the right. So that is the slope that would be at the parking lot. I did try and make a larger version of this, but we ran out of time with our presentation.
Chair, I would like to state for the record that Chief Plummer is attending and we reach a quorum at 2:21 p.m.
Now have a quorum?
Yes, we do have a quorum.
Okay, let's fall back on item number one, to appoint a vice chair since... Is this a temporary assignment for vice chair while Dr. Baker's out, or?
That's what he disclosed to the committee several weeks ago. It seemed to be about a 12-week endeavor, as I recall. And so it could be more or less. Is that about right? Yeah. Okay. And so the concern was that should our mayor and chair of the committee be absent, you know, lots of important things for mayors to do, ribbon cuttings and all that sort of stuff. So should you need to go somewhere, we needed someone else to facilitate these meetings.
Okay, so do we want to make this a temporary appointment or do you want to make this an actual appointment? Proof of that? Anybody?
If Trent's open to it, I say we do it permanent.
I think that was a nomination.
Yes, it is a nomination.
Well, and so what we're talking about, just maybe to give him a second to catch his breath.
Right.
So we're talking about facilitating our meetings, so calling the meeting to order and really just
do what I do.
Helping the meeting through the agenda. You have staff support that work with you on scheduling the meetings, confirming the agenda items, things like that, and help you with the meeting. But that's really what we're talking about.
Or do you want to just do it temporary until Dr. Baker's back?
Is there any other nominations? So we have a nomination. Do we have a second for?
I'll second it for Trent to be temporary until.
Vice chair until Dr. Baker comes back. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So back at this committee's business, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion regarding this committee? I already said,
aye.
Having eyes. Was there any opposed? Thank you, Dean. Didn't mean that. That's fine. Trent, thank you. All right, bounce back up to number four, update on weekend resource meeting.
This part's a verbal report. Marco, City of Madras Code Enforcement Officer. The resource group, it is the homeless resource group, and it's a group that was put together by Sergeant Webb from the police department. And it's a important part of our implementation of the campsite ordinance that was established last year. And what the resource group is, it's made up of social service agencies and outreach workers that by state law, whenever we implement a relocation of a campsite, we must notify this group, the social services folks, that we're going to be relocating someone within 72 hours, shutting down a campsite. So that way there's an opportunity for the campers to have access to resources. And social services would be coordinating with the outreach workers, which would be like the nonprofits and the other groups and resources that are available to help our campers. So implementation of our ordinance for two parts, the relocation of an unauthorized campsite and our campsite regulations that we're going to be implementing for our authorized camping. We'd be using the resource group to be our sounding board to ensure that we're being humane that we're being objective and reasonable in our implementation of our ordinances. And it's an idea that social services has a role and responsibility, and whenever law enforcement's involved in a an action, that they would ensure that they're part of the whole process.
Any questions for Marco on the resources? Let's see. Next meeting, April 15th. Everybody got that? At 2 p.m.
Chair, I would like to ask the group if there is any agenda items they would like to see in the next meeting scheduled on April 15th. Please send them to me, and we can include that in our next meeting.
Staff was considering if there wasn't agenda items, maybe canceling meeting.
How many do we have a month? We have
two a month.
We could probably drop down to one, I
think. Staff did not want to make that decision, but rather the committee.
How's the committee feel? Do we drop down to one a month?
I'd like to make a motion that we go to one meeting a month.
I'll second it.
Have a motion to second to drop down to one meeting a month. Any further discussion?
Can we agree what meeting would that be? Is it
we'll
the second
start in,
week?
We'll start next in May.
Second week of the month?
Oh, you mean which week?
Which week?
I think
yes.
The second week is that.
I think it works better for staff.
Okay. So one meeting a month on the second week. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It is so. Is that good? All right. Thank you, Fatima. Is there any other business needs to be brought forth?
Yes. Cindy, with Best Care, I wanted to see if maybe we could get a report from Best Care on the $1.5 million that Best Care has received for construction of housing. And see, not now, but maybe at a future meeting, you Best Care or someone from your agency could talk about what the vision is there and how that fits into the larger housing plan in their community.
That you would have to ask Heather Crow Martinez. That's way above my pay grade. Yeah.
Could you help us schedule a report from her or a presentation?
I will email you and her, and you can email her and talk to her about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's about?
There was $1.5 million in state funding is reported in the Ben Bulletin this weekend to Best Care.
City funding?
State funding.
State funding.
And there's a need to raise an additional $3 million for some additional costs, like, you know, construction, things like that. And so I thought it would be important for this group to understand that funding, that grant funding has been provided, what the timeline is, what the general plan is for the housing. It's for, as I understand it, for people with behavioral health and other.
Alcohol and drug.
Yeah.
And I actually, that would probably, we can ask Heather, but I think she would direct that to Rick Trevlon, the director of Best Care, because he's the one that gets all the money and distributes it, right. Not Heather.
Format how you want it or what you, I'll be happy to email her myself.
Okay, great.
That would, great.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
And I know Heather, so, yeah.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Anything else?
Yes. Unless someone else has something. Staff would like to present the implementation of the camping ordinance, our next steps.
Say that again.
We have next steps for implementation of the camping ordinance presentation that we'd like to show you.
Oh, okay.
That's better. Very good. So the Willow Creek campsite, we're looking at what steps we're going to take for implementation of the camping ordinance, and it would be looking at debris management. And we've got several pictures that we'd like to show you of what were taken just last week at the campsite, and then what our strategy and ideas are for implementation and working with the Willow Creek campsite. If you could move on to the next one. So this was last week. There's a small area here to the right that's circled of debris that was picked up and picked in the campsite. And this location would be if you walked from the ODOT property near Sonic and walked into the camp and just past the dumpster. And the campsite has had four dumpsters full of debris pulled out in the last 6 weeks. So four full dumpsters of debris have been carried out. And the walking the campsite, it's very difficult to see that there's actually been a lot of progress, but there's been quite a bit of debris that's been pulled out. We can move to the next slide. This is looking at an area into the camp, and they've got a walkway, and there's about 20 shelters right now, makeshift shelters that are there. And in the bottom of this, you can kind of see a circle and an arrow. That's where this picture is taken from. If we go to the next slide, this is from the other end of the camp walking in, and there's shopping carts that we're going to be securing this next week, moving those out. There's other shopping carts that are full of debris. We're going to be engaging with the campers to remove debris from the shopping carts, and then that way we can reclaim those. So the significant thing is that the four dumpster fulls of debris that's been pulled out was self-initiated. It's not our engagement with the campsite. It's some work that they've been doing on their own to try and manage the debris. This next week, we're going to start engaging with the campsite people like the previous code enforcement officer was doing by going down a couple times a week and actually spending an hour, hour and a half with them to engage in kind of organizing this process and validating the work that they've initiated. You can go to the next slide. This is an area that's kind of opposite the previous picture that we started off with. They've got a couple wheelbarrows, and the area on the left is mostly just piles of debris with a couple campsites on either side. And the structures on the right, looking at the pictures, have been there for the last year or so. And if we go to the next slide, this is there's a lawnmower, there's carts, there's all kinds of debris, and the junk and things that are there around the shelters, a lot of it doesn't make sense why that material would even be there. And one idea would be these things need to be drug across town and then drug all the way into this campsite. So there's an opportunity working with the police for if we see people moving debris piles around somewhere, where are they going with it? And bringing it in this location just makes it more difficult to dispose of the trash. If you go to the next slide, this is an area close to the dumpster. You can see a pile of debris, and this is where they've been burning like a campfire, and you can actually see the charred on the tree that's located right there. Next slide. And this is in the creek. There's a lot of debris in the creek, and I've got documentation for identifying that as a future project of emptying debris. But take a look at what's in there. Someone built a little porta potty. They nailed a toilet seat to a 2x4 frame. My expectation is it didn't work very well, so they threw it away and just threw it into the creek. So the next slide. So what we're doing, and this is the wrap up for our presentation, is we're going to looking at implementing the camping ordinance. We need to engage the community, the individuals that are there. They have some type of a structure and process that is actually organizing filling the dumpster, which is very, very good. What we'd like to do is engage with them and help guide and direct and basically build professional relationship with the folks and start to gauge our greater involvement with them that we're actually helping them versus are we getting pushback and resistance? If we want to implement the camping ordinance, we have to have that relationship. And we have to believe that our next steps in our implementation is going to be successful. And if there's a holdup to that, we'll go back to the homeless resource group and try and come up with a strategy, talk with the folks that have relationships with the people in the camp to make sure that any implementation that we're going to work on is going to be successful. So the strategies that we're looking at would be working from the dumpster that's there, working towards the camp and leaving the shelters, their makeshift shelters alone, but looking at capturing the debris and getting that into the dumpster so that we start to manage the rubble pile. I would characterize it as we have people living in piles of trash, basically. That's what it looks like. It looks like nobody cares. The community needs to care. We're going to actually implement something, and we're going to work on an end result where it looks like the campsite and the campers care too. So the idea would be that we have leaving their shelters alone. That's their property. If they have personal items, try and get those into their camp. And then anything on the outside, we'd be working with them to ensure that it's debris, and then working with them to get the debris into the dumpster and carry it away. And I'm looking forward to an opportunity where we're going to be emptying the dumpster twice a week. Our current practice has been about once a week or week and a half of emptying the dumpster. Would there be any questions?
What's the expense of dumping the dumpster?
I don't have those details, and that's a process that's been on place with a contract. So we can actually come back with that information of how much we've spent.
Yeah, so oftentimes these dumpsters are not full when we bring down the large dumpsters. And so the cost kind of varies because they don't fill them up. It's somewhere between $500 to maybe $1,500. Lately, it's been on the lower side. Having manager looking at our financial reports or the community cleanup fund, we have resources available for this. That's a good thing. We're not nearing fully spent, but we also anticipate that in the next 3 to 4 months, we're really going to be ramping up enforcement of the camping regulations. So I think we're resourced to do this, but the work done to date has been within budget.
So Nick, question for you and Marco is, if we start enforcing the camping ordinance, do you think that people will move on and we'll see a reduction in trash, or to help manage our costs, or is it going to take a different initiative?
I wish I could predict that. I think there's probably a little bit of both, to be perfectly honest with you. I think when people are now required to leave their camp every day, and when we go through our policies of assessing whether those items left behind have any material value, you're likely going to start throwing away more and more debris, is the technical term. And so, yes, you may have a spike in cost because you're moving people or requiring them to move every day, and they're leaving things behind that don't have material value. Eventually that goes away, so your volume of trash diminishes, so your cost would go down. But then again, I wish I could predict that in the future. I really do believe that part of the approach of enforcing our camping regulations, working with our houseless, is circumstances will change over time. The problem we have today will be different than tomorrow. And so it's a little hard for me to predict on that, but I would generally like to think over time that those costs go down.
Quick question for Marco. And we've had this conversation, I think, Marco, we talked about a little bit, and I was still unclear. Is the movement from where they're at going to be orchestrated with the 3rd Street right-of-way camping? So that, because poor Tony is not going to be able to suddenly take this onslaught, nor are those people going to want to be there. So I'm just kind of wondering if this new camping place on the 3rd Street right away is going to be ready when we actually start moving them, for them to be a designated camp place for them, if that'll be done.
For implementation of the camping ordinance, we're going to work on a sequence of events and other aspects that need to be in place, and looking at incremental steps to implement it. So the 3rd Street is critical, that if we want them to move out of the Willow Creek area, it would be 3rd Street's ready to go. And then the other aspect of incremental steps that we expect to have in place is, well, there's several campsites on private property right now. We're going to be engaged with the private property locations to relocate those folks back into the authorized camping areas. But what will end up happening is, if we start to move people from where they're camped right now and we're taking away their shelters, we don't want to just push those people into the existing camps that are on private property. So we want to have those areas that we're managing the private property areas, and then that way we have engagement with those folks already, so that way it won't be just adding more to the private property campers.
So the short answer is yes.
Yes.
Okay, good.
But isn't Willow Creek part, isn't that a designated camp area that we all agreed upon?
It is.
Some could stay as long as they have the right size tent and not makeshift plywood homes.
That is technically correct, Cindy, but I think there's a growing opinion among staff that the existing area where they're camping has been so degraded that we need to remove those individuals and remediate that property, get it back to a condition that it is no longer contaminated or you have waste down there. And quite frankly, I think when we get to that point, we'll also be at a junction where this committee and the city council need to reevaluate. Do we even want to let them come back based on the vulnerability to city assets and other concerns related to public safety and our fire and EMS folks?
I agree, especially the damage done to the creek.
Yeah.
Thank you. I figured that.
Trent, I had a question about when Kiever first started doing his code enforcement stuff. Dr. Baker mentioned that we noticed a market increase of people seeking treatment and getting into treatment. Has that continued?
Yes.
I've also noticed in my own stock, our crews haven't been using as much Narcan. So have you seen a decrease in overdoses?
There has been a slight decrease in overdoses.
And that, when I bring that up, is that you see a different number than I do, usually because people have been self-medicating or self-saving. So we haven't been getting called up because you provide it. So I just want to know if you've seen a change.
It's a slight decrease. Still overdoses being reported to myself. There's been a shortage of blue pills in the area, so I think that plays a part in it as well.
Okay.
But more of the powdered fentanyl is what I'm being told.
Okay. It's helpful to know that the seeking resources, though, that's encouraging. Cindy, one thing I was talking to, Will and I met with somebody who was trying to bring in some kind of resources, and we kind of got the feeling it's more of a idea stage, not a really helpful stage. And the comment we made to her was, what we're really short on when you're talking about people getting help is manpower to provide that help. And is Best Care still at that short staffing?
Actually, we're not too bad. I know more people are coming to that Tuesday morning meeting, aren't they, with the burn grant, Trent? The ones you meet with Sergeant Webb, a lot more peer support people and that kind of stuff. We're geared up. I think we're only one counselor, I think, short. So we're doing better. It's just housing is the issue.
So housing is where we're really short at right now.
Oh, we need low income housing, affordable housing. I mean, just transitional housing. We need lots. Yeah.
And we know where to start directing our efforts off. Anybody have anything else? Thank you for your input. We'll see you next month.